Did somebody say NBL?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. This is episode 11, and we're doing round 18, which is the last round of this NBL season, 18-19. And let's kick it off with the first game of the round, which was New Zealand at home versus Illawarra. I didn't watch this game, full disclosure. Didn't have any bearing on the outcome of the standings, and therefore I didn't bother. New Zealand were $1.42 and Illawarra $2.89. I tipped New Zealand, and they won quite handedly, 130-96. Really won off the strength of a strong first quarter, where they outscored Illawarra 34-24, and then in the third quarter, 37-21. Illawarra have been a little bit of a mess all year. This came out, I don't know if it was this game, I believe this game was before there was some rumours that an NBL club was in trouble, not paying player contracts as well as superannuation. Obviously Illawarra were at the head of that speculation. That has turned out to be, so far has been turned out to be untrue or a half-truth. Haven't got the full extent of that. Yet, top performers in this one, Sean Long had 21 points and 8 rebounds. Corey Webster was back on form with 18 points. And Jared Weeks, the new addition to the Boomers team that will go over and play in the FIBA World Cup qualifier, 19 points. Daniel Greeter had 17 for Illawarra, along with Emmett Nahu, who had 10 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. And AJ Ogilvy did a nice job off the bench, 12 points, 4 rebounds. Underperformers, Cedric Jackson for the Illawarra Hawks. He's had a tough year. Didn't get along with some of the players. Didn't get along with seemingly Coach Beveridge. In 20 minutes, he managed just 2 points. Didn't make anything from the field. 2 rebounds, an assist, and 3 turnovers in half a game. Jordan Jett struggled as well. 17 and a half minutes, 7 points, a rebound, an assist, 17% from the field. So both of their imports struggling. Conklin had a good year. It'll be really interesting to see what they do with free agency and roster building going into next season. They need to do a bit of a shake-up. Obviously, not making the playoffs would suggest that. We'll see what they do. I would have thought Cedric Jackson would not return. Jordan Jett may, unlikely though. And Conklin seemed to have a pretty good year, but maybe they just clear the decks and hand the game over to Greeter and Nah. You look at the team stat discrepancies here. Assists were the big one. New Zealand had 34. Illawarra only had 20, so that's plus 14 to New Zealand. Turnovers, New Zealand only had 7. Illawarra had 14. And in that sort of subsection was the steals, where New Zealand had 10. Illawarra only had 5. And then you look at points in the paint. New Zealand had 46, Illawarra had 26, so plus 20. So it was a real smattering. I mean, to put up 130 points in a 10-minute quarter game was pretty impressive from the Breakers. That was that one. Let's move straight along. Had no bearing on the outcome. This next one was a big one. I didn't think it was going to be. I watched this replayed because I didn't think it was going to be a bigger game as it was, but it turned out it is. Melbourne versus Cairns. I obviously picked Melbourne in this one. Melbourne were paying $1.22, Cairns $4.35. And Cairns got up 87-85 on the strength of a nice first quarter. Melbourne were 19 for Melbourne, 24 to Cairns. And then Cairns pretty consistent the rest of the way. Almost threw it away in the fourth, but were able to hang on. Top performers for Melbourne was Chris Golding, 22 points, 47% from the field. Did shoot 2 of 10 from outside. He's getting pretty trigger happy. He's always pretty trigger happy, but you know, normally he makes a bit better percentage than that. 3 rebounds, 4 assists. DJ Kennedy had another nice little stat line across the game. 12 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists. Was really the only consistent performer for Melbourne along the way. Maybe Mitch McCarron as well, 13 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals. And then Pledger deserves a bit of a pat on the back. 8 points, 4 rebounds, 6 of 6 from the free throw line, 2 blocks. Melo Trimble was good, 21 points, 5 rebounds, 9 assists, 50% from the field, 3 turnovers, but 2 steals. DJ Newball was kind of the guy I've got an asterisk next to. He kind of won this game for them, scoring a lot in the third when Melbourne were looking like they were going to make a push. He had 17 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 50% from the field. Rob Lowe, nice little game, 9 points, 10 rebounds, half of which were offensive, 2 blocks. Alex Loughton had a nice first quarter. I think he had 11 points in the first quarter. Ended the game with 14. Didn't score past halftime, I don't believe. 14 points, 56% from the field, 6 rebounds. And then Jarrod Kenny kind of gets a bit of an honorable mention in this game. 9 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 0 turnovers. Had a couple of bad plays late on that could have cost them, but didn't. And played pretty steadily. And obviously, you know, knocked Casper Ware around, who headlines are underperformers. In 35 minutes, Casper only had the 18 points, 5 of 19 for 26.3%, 4 assists, 3 turnovers. Josh Boone, only 14 minutes for Josh Boone, 7 points, a rebound, an assist. They kind of went small ball to try and get something in this game. Craig Moller had an amazing game. Donuts all the way across the board in 7 minutes and 26 seconds. Had one foul, though. That was the only thing that broke the clean streak across the stat pad. And then Dave Barlow sort of started a string of games for him where he's just been frustrated with the way the game's called. He's a big, strong guy, and he's bumping people out of the way, and he's getting called for fouls on it. He had 22 minutes on the floor, 3 points, 1 of 4, 4 rebounds, 2 turnovers, 5 fouls, and looked frustrated. Even the commentators were making mention of that. You look at the team stat discrepancies, not a lot going on, but 3-point field goals. Melbourne were 8 of 27 for 29.5%. Whereas Cairns, 13 of 27 for 48%. You know, that's 5 extra threes. That's 15 points. That's kind of where they won it. I mean, and the only thing that kept this close was that Cairns looked like they were going to throw this ball game away with the turnovers. Melbourne only had 15, which is a little bit high for them. And Cairns had 23, though, which is just reminiscent of this team. I watched this game. So looking at the eye test, in the third quarter, DJ Newball had 15 points in the third quarter alone. As I was saying, he ended the game with 17. So kind of took the game on his shoulders at that point. Hit a bunch of stuff, a couple of threes, a couple of scores. The other big one was at one point, DJ Newball had 9 points in a row when Chris Golding was guarding him. So he had a decent little game. At the 7 minute and 43 second mark of the fourth quarter, Melbourne went small. They took out Josh Boone and he did not return. What's amazing is Cairns only scored 4 points in the last 5.5 minutes of this game. You look at the scoring from that point on. The last field goal that Cairns made was a 3-point shot by Devin Hall at the 5 minute and 41 second mark. So they go scoreless. They go, what's incredible is Cairns only go 0-4. In 5 minutes, they turned the ball over 7 times in the last 5 minutes, 5.5 minutes. It really was just sort of keep it out of Trimble's hands and see what everyone else can do. And as you could probably tell, they didn't do a lot. Melbourne, on the other hand, in that last 5 minutes and 41 seconds, had 9 points. They shot 4 of 15, though, so under 30%. And then they had one turnover. They were grabbing offensive rebounds, obviously forcing the turnovers. They forced 7, but just couldn't capitalize. Again, with Melbourne, this game was bad, and it cost them the top spot, which may really come back to bite them because now, obviously, they play Sydney in that first round. Not a good idea. And they looked lazy and casual, but when they decided to turn it on, they looked quite good. But the problem they have going forward is Boone's been disengaged in this game and in the next game that we'll talk about against Perth. He hasn't had huge minutes. He hasn't had huge impact. But when they play Sydney, he's probably going to need to. He's the only guy who can guard Bogut on that team. That'll be interesting. Melbourne might attempt to go small, play DJ Kennedy, Barlow, McCarron, Casper Ware, and Bubbles. It should be interesting to see how that holds up against Bogut and the Kings in the finals. But that was basically it, really. Couldn't quite do it. And that's it. Let's move on to the next game. And that game, that loss to Cairns, cost Melbourne the top spot. Next game was Perth and Adelaide. Now, this was a good game out in Perth. This was a good game of two teams playing well. Perth won it 93-85, really off the strength of a great fourth quarter led by Bryce Cotton. They scored 28 points to Adelaide 16 in that quarter, plus 12. Adelaide kind of had this game because they jumped out to, again, a big first quarter lead, which they've done against Perth in the past in Perth. Perth had 17 in the first quarter. Adelaide had 25, so they had a nice 8-point lead going into the quarter break. Top performers, Bryce Cotton, he was on fire. He had 29 points. You look at his scoring breakdown. He had 5 points in the first half, and then he had 24 in the third and fourth quarters. So 13 in the third and 11 in the fourth. Guy was on fire. Tirico White had 20 points in this game. Kind of a return to form for him. 4 rebounds and a steal. Damian Martin didn't score a lot. 1 of 4. 14% from the field, apparently. That doesn't make sense. 7 rebounds, 9 assists, 1 steal. Nick Kay had 14 points, 11 rebounds, 3 of which were offensive. DJ had 23 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists. Anthony Drimmick had a nice first half, 18 points, 10 rebounds, 2 of which were offensive, 4 steals. Drimmick, again, he does this every time. Him and DJ had great first halves. I mean, I don't know exactly what he did to half time, but I seem to remember him having sort of, you know, 15 or 16 of his first points in either the first quarter or the first half, and then go scoreless the rest of the way. That's kind of his MO on Drimmick. Daniel Johnson, 23 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists. I've already said that. Underperformers, I was expecting a lot more out of Conger and Wiley in this game. Wiley had a nice first half against Perth the last time they played in Perth. Didn't happen in this one. Wiley only had the 8 points. Conger had 10. Conger had 5 turnovers, and Wiley had the 8 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 turnovers. Dayton Sobey wasn't great in this game as far as scoring goes. 9 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 of 11, 36%, 3 turnovers. Just couldn't quite get it going. Kasper Ware's speed really seemed to bother him. Had a couple of open looks where there'd be a pick and roll and he'd stay behind, but it just wasn't working for him. Look at the team stat discrepancies. 3-point field goals. Perth shot 40%. Adelaide shot 33%. So Perth made 10 of them, which is pretty good for them. And Adelaide made 11, but took 33 shots to get there. So they made 1 extra 3, but took 8 shots to get it. You look at free throws. Perth attempted 25 and made 17 of them. Adelaide only attempted 14. Adelaide are a team that goes to the line a lot. Their free throw attempted average is something like 26 a game. You see that's well below average, 13 attempts below average. Offensive rebounds, Perth had a slight margin, plus 2, 12 to 10. The assist margin, Perth had an edge, 20 points, 20 assists, pardon me, 14 to Adelaide, plus 6. And the turnovers, Adelaide had 5 more than Perth. You look at the steals, double. Perth had 8 steals, Adelaide only had 4. So Perth kind of did what they do, which is, I guess, get on the offensive rebounds. They did that a little bit, not as effectively as they have in the past, but did win that battle. They hit a couple of shots, a couple of 3-point shots, which is not really their thing, but took care of the ball. 11 turnovers, that's around about their average, a little bit lower. So it's not bad. I mean, you look at the key points of this game. Bryce Cotton had 29, Tirico Wright had 20 points. That's 53% of Perth scoring, 49 points out of a total of 93. So, you know, they played through their stars and it worked out. Couple of things I took from this game. You look at the 7-minute and 24-second mark. Tirico White hit a jump shot that was just perfect. That was just perfect form. The thing that really turned this game, and I forget the time code of it, but it was Greg Heyer's hit on Harry Frolling. Frolling hung him up on a screen. It was a fair play. Heyer felt, got injured by it, hurt by it. Got up down the floor. Frolling went to set another pick, and Greg High just threw his shoulder into him, committed an unsportsmanlike foul. It got the crowd going crazy, and as a result, really turned the game around for the Wildcats, who were at that time were sort of sniffing around at the lead. What bugged me about the play was, well, what I felt good about the play was, okay, here's basketball. It's an eclectic sport, and you know, an unsportsmanlike foul is seemingly going to have a huge impact on the game. It showed that, you know, everyone can contribute on a basketball court. What I didn't like about the play was, here we are, a negative play. It's an aggressive play. Actually, it's not an aggressive play. It's a reactionary play. Guy got hurt, got up, smacked the guy. Did it semi-legally. But, you know, here we are applauding an unsportsmanlike foul. Any clown can go out there and do that play that Greg Heyer did. Anyone can do that. Every butcher, baker, and candlestick maker. What I'd prefer is if Greg or any of the other Wildcats, which I think they were going to do anyway, had showed an exhibit of skill and aggression and got the crowd going that way. rather than with just sort of, I don't want to say thuggery, but certainly unsportsmanlike conduct. But more importantly than that play, you know, people say, oh, that play turned it. No, what really turned it was then after that, the crowd got going and Perth went to a small lineup of Bryce Cotton, Damian Martin, Nick Kay, Tirico White and Steindl. And that really seemed to put Adelaide on the back foot. Adelaide was thrown off by the crowd, but also the fact that Perth went to this smaller lineup and they got up and pressed and played a really tight quarter-court man-to-man defense. And that kind of had them on the back foot. Into the fourth quarter, Steindl was out there, and Steindl didn't get a lot of minutes, didn't have a lot of impact in this game. The reason why is because when he was out there, Demetrius Konga was given license to attack him. There is a funny play at the 8 minute and 35 second mark of the fourth quarter where Konga's scored a couple on Steindl. Brendan Teese is on the sideline yelling at Steindl, you know, you can't guard him, da-da-da-da. It's on an inbound. The inbound comes into Steindl, who immediately hits a three in front of the Adelaide 36er bench. So that's a nice touch. Got to have a look at the layup that Bryce Cotton does over DJ at the 5 minute and 52 second mark. He puts it high off the glass. I've never seen anything like it. Yeah, I mean, Adelaide just got kind of trigger happy. From the three in the first half, they were 9 of 15. A lot of that owes itself to Anthony Drimmick, who was on fire. But after the second half, they go 2 of 18. The cause for that, I'm not really sure. I think it's that small ball lineup of Perth. But Adelaide just fell in love with the outside shot. They weren't going to the basket and therefore didn't get calls. I didn't think it was a result of any reffing bias or problem. They just weren't as aggressive. And that's where guys like Konga and Wiley and Sobey need to step up. And unfortunately in this game they didn't, and they really needed this one to make the playoffs. If they had won this, they would have qualified for the finals in fourth spot. Losing this one, they now are relying on Brisbane to beat New Zealand, which is the game after this one. I really did feel like in the first quarter the Wildcats were really just packing the paint. And I do feel like sometimes the Wildcat legacy of really stingy, tight defense can work against them in certain matchups, this being one of them. You know, the Adelaide team is a team that's got stretchy bigs and like to shoot from the outside, like to shoot, run, gun, and Perth were kind of stuck in their ways, you know, with everyone having a foot in the keyway, even when it was, you know, DJ coming down on trails, hitting threes. So they've got to be careful of that and not get caught into playing Wildcat basketball, but Wildcat basketball that makes sense under the circumstances. Next game of the round was Sydney versus Cairns. In full disclosure, I didn't watch this game. I watched patches of it here or there, and it was quite interesting. Cairns put up an admirable effort, 84-89, but Sydney coming up the winners with 89, really off the strength of a strong first quarter, 7-plus points in the first quarter, 29-22, that was the biggest discrepancy. Sydney kind of faltered in the next two quarters, but then in the fourth stood up. Top performers, Bogut had a usual Bogut NBL stat line. He had 12 points, 12 rebounds, 4 were offensive, 6 assists, 5 blocks. I mean, that is an MVP stat line. Kevin Lish, 18 points, 40% from the field, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, 1 turnover, 8 of 10 from the free throw line, was making things happen and guarding Mello Trimble most of the time. Brad Newley had 19 points on 53% shooting, 6 rebounds. So it's good to see him getting some consistent high teens scoring. Sydney going to need that from him in the finals. Honorable mention, Kyle Adnam was stepped up and played in the place of Jerome Randall. He played 27.5 minutes in this game, 13 points, 44% from the field. And then Brian Bowen, 18 minutes, 8 points, 42% from the field, 5 rebounds. That's the sort of stat line that the Sydney Kings need from Brian Bowen in the finals. You know, anywhere between sort of 6 and 12 points, 5 rebounds, preferably one of them or two of them offensively, in good minutes and shoot at a high percentage. A lot of people are down on Bowen. A lot of people think he's flash in the pan. I disagree. I think his athleticism is most on show and most effective and useful for the Kings when it's put towards rebounding. You know, rebounds, you can get great position, you can do all this, but if you don't actually have eyes for the ball and the ability to jump and spring off the floor and catch it and swipe it out of the air, you're not going to get it. And this kid does. When he comes in, he gets high on rebounds. He jumps, He jumps and he meets that ball just as it's coming off the rim. And I think it's really important for Sydney because it gives them, first of all, a rebounding presence that they need outside of Bogut, but also increases their speed. You know, when Bogut catches a rebound, he's not turning around and looking to either put it on the deck or push it forward. He's more than often not holding it against his chest, waiting for Randall. It slows their team down. And it's important for guys like Newley to get out and run. Cairns, Melo Trimble as always, 21 points, didn't shoot well, 25% from the field, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, no one does against Kevin Lish. Alex Loughton, in his last game ever, 17 points, 62% from the field, 3 rebounds. And then Jared Kenny again, 13 points, shot 100% from the field, didn't miss, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. Honorable mention as well to Tom Wilson, 5 points in 4 minutes, shot pretty well, probably should have seen more time all year, just didn't happen for him. Underperformers, Nate Jawine. 9.5 minutes, 0 points, 0-4, 2 rebounds, a turnover. Had a bad exchange with Coach Mike Kelly in, I believe it was the sort of middle of the second quarter, where in the absence of Randall, Mike Kelly was looking to put some pressure on the ball handlers, particularly off pick and roll. And so he went, he said, you know, let's go with the blitz. In other words, the big guy or whoever's guarding the man setting the screen double teams or hedges strongly the player coming off. And Mike Kelly suggested that. Jawai then chimes up, everybody. And he goes, yeah, everybody. And then kind of goes back to what he was saying. And then Mike Kelly turns back around and Jawai's there shaking his head, whatever. Mike Kelly says, hey, if you don't want to do it, you know, but don't give me that look. If you don't want to do it, I'll sub you out. Jawai walks off the court, giving Kelly all kinds of stink eye, gets on the court, he's kind of joking around with people. I think he immediately commits a turnover. You know, and there's no, what I was looking for was an instance where they actually went to a pick and roll defense to see whether he'd actually do what Kelly had asked him. It didn't actually happen. He did miss a few rotations here or there and give up a foul on Brad Newley. Kind of got taken out a couple of minutes later. I don't think it was really in response to any of his play. And then as he's coming out, Mike Kelly's trying to speak to Nate. And Nate kind of walks off, has to be dragged back, doesn't really pay attention and sits back down. Shane Healy even made mention of it himself, that the kid wasn't paying attention. So it was a bad look. And I don't know whether he's out of contract or not, because obviously Kansas season is over. He may need a change of scenery if that's the way the Cairns tight ends are going to be coached. I think Nate Jawai's got a lot to give this league. He's getting older. He's big. He needs a certain sort of minutes. And obviously, I believe he is from Sydney. My strong answer to him would be to join the Sydney Kings and back up Andrew Bogut. And I think that would be a special pairing. Now, I have no idea whether he was out of contract. And I will be doing a sort of NBL free agent special, but that's going to be done, obviously, after the finals. Guys, let's go team stat discrepancies. Free throws again. Sydney shot 20 of 26. Cairns only shot 16 attempts. Made 14 of them. High percentage, but just didn't get the volume. So obviously Sydney scored an extra 6 points at the line on an extra 10 attempts. Just shows the aggressiveness. Rim protection. Bogut and the Kings had 7 blocks. Cairns didn't have a single one. Points in the paint. As a result, Cairns only scored 22 points in the paint, whereas Sydney scored 46. When you haven't got a shot blocker in there, have a guess what happens. Bench points. Sydney 23. Not normally their throwaway. They're fraway. Not normally their thing. 23 points on the bench. Cairns only had 8. Nate Jawai's their bench. When he comes off it, didn't have it. Moving on to the next one. Brisbane versus New Zealand. Now, this was a big game because obviously Adelaide lost to Perth in Perth. So New Zealand, if they win this game, Adelaide's in. If Brisbane take care of business, they get in. Brisbane were $1.56. New Zealand, $2.44. It came right down to the wire. But in the end, Lamar Patterson and the Brisbane Bullets, too good. 84-78. Top performers. I thought Lamar Patterson was good in this game. Was frustrated early and committed a lot of turnovers. Had 5 for the game, but ended with 23 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists. Mika Vekona was outstanding, and talk about it later on, but NBL Awards, Ruben Tarangi won the sixth man award, and people were saying he's not even the best guy off the bench for this team, which is fair. Had 14 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists. Had to step up big because Matt Hodgson got in early foul trouble. And so Mika had to come through. But the big one who I got to give a good stroke to and a good pat on the back is Jason Kidd. Had 18 points, I think 15 in the first quarter. Give me 2 seconds. No, 13 points in the first quarter. Was looking good. It's looking real good. Hitting shots, being fearless, coming off picks and catching, looking to score, looking to shoot. Cam Glennon was out, and he knew it, and he played well. 18 points, 2 rebounds, 6 assists. As I said, 13 first quarter points. For New Zealand, it was all about Sean Long again. 23 points, 9 rebounds, 1 assist, 4 blocks, 7 of 15 from the field, 47%. Ty Wesley, 17 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. Honorable mention was Luke Kendall. Jeremy Kendall. Jeremy Kendall, 4.5 minutes, 5 points, and a block. Lamanis has been resistant to give Kendall consistent minutes. He seems to obviously prefer Kadi, which I believe after this performance and his whole year, he's struggled up and down, but he is a very conservative ball handler. He doesn't turn over a lot, but does seem to give those bench minutes to Adam Gibson, who played 29 minutes in this game. Started in the place of Cam Glidden, had 29 minutes, was 0 of 7, 0 of 5 from the 3-point line, ended with 2 points, 5 rebounds and an assist. I was hoping that Jeremy Kendall would see a little bit more time, and I would have actually, there was time, if Kadee's struggles had happened earlier in the year, they would have certainly been flirting with the idea of replacing him in the starting lineup with Jeremy Kendall. But even still, with Cam Glidden out there, they went in another direction. Or Lamanis went in another direction. Key team stat discrepancies. Field goal percentage. Brisbane, 41%. New Zealand, 34%. That's not great. Assists. Brisbane, 17. New Zealand, 13. Plus 4 to Brisbane. Offensive rebounds, plus 2 to New Zealand. Not a lot, but when you consider that New Zealand had 6 offensive rebounds in the fourth quarter alone, they were chasing off the backboard, and in particular, Sean Long. And my keys to the game here were, outside of Long and Ty Wesley, who were a combined 13 of 30 for 43%, which is okay, the rest of the team were a combined 14 of 49. That's 28%. Long and Wesley were 5 of 10 from the outside. The rest of the team were 4 of 25. That's terrible. And really, that fourth quarter was, they'd come up with either a stop or a score or a turnover or a steal, whatever, because Brisbane were not particularly good. And then they just come down, and it must have been awfully frustrating for Sean Long to see the ball just get launched over his head every time. I was watching, and I went back and recounted. He got one serious touch, one actual design touch in the post in the fourth quarter, and it really was just a simple post up where he caught it. And he did miss the shot. But it really showed, I think, how undercoached this New Zealand team is, and how much they underthink the game. What I hated about that post-up was, Sean Long is a good post-up player, but to me, he's more of a picking, rolling, slashing big. And to get his only touch in the fourth quarter to be just a standard post-up, it's not what you want. You want to get him in screen roll action. You want to get him off the ball. You want his, you want him screening to then be the screener and roll. There's so many things you could do with him. He can shoot from the outside, and they just plonked him in the low block, fed him the ball once, and he turned around and tried to make a move. That's prehistoric, antiquated basketball, especially with a talent like Sean Long. It did bug me, And then you go to the other side and you see Brisbane using Lamar Patterson really quite well. Yeah, in the fourth quarter, I think he hit 2 big threes. Let's have a look here. Yeah, he has a nice take at the hoop at the, don't have a time code, under a minute left, but he, came off a pick, he caught it, he was at the middle of the court. And, it just showed that Brisbane were getting their best guy the ball in positions where he likes to score and do things, whereas New Zealand weren't doing that. Patterson had a nice little cut where he came off a screen, caught it right at the top of the keyway, give him the chance to just do what he does, which is, put the ball on the deck a little bit, shimmy, shake, old man move, and get to the cup. And on this instance, he just went straight to the basket, but you would have seen that he would have been comfortable if he'd been stopped, drawn a double team, he would have kicked it off to someone. And then hit a couple of nice threes as well. So, you know, a couple of on-off games, and the pressure on him is huge with this Brisbane team. His turnover numbers are high. He's got to get those down. And he had bad turnovers in this one where he just kind of kicked it out of bounds or dribbled out of bounds or was standing out of bounds. Really bad ones like that. So he's better than that. What I would like to see was a huge block at the 6 minute and 17 second mark by Matt Hodgson, who chased down a big shot and blocked it, and then Bester went the other way, and that kind of changed the complexion of the game, put them back up 5 points, 73-68. So it's good to see a guy who did struggle terribly in this game and got scored on a lot, still hustling towards the end. But as I was saying, in Sean Long's credit, you know, the only time he got the ball in the fourth quarter is when he got that one catch in the post, or he was chasing it off the backboard. And I was really impressed by his dedication to continue to try and hit the O boards, make something happen for himself, despite his guards almost contemptuously going away from him. It was not a good look, especially when you're shooting that poorly. I mean, we talked about how badly the rest of the team shot, but let me just put it in perspective here. Abercrombie went 2 of 7. Shea Illy went 1 of 5. Corey Webster went 2 of 19. Finn Delaney was okay, 3 of 8. Ramon Moore was 2 of 5. Patrick Rashard was 2 of 6. And Jared Weeks was 2 of 9. It's not going to do it. And that is how it goes. Next game was Melbourne versus Perth. Now, I can honestly say this was the last game of the round. Second place was on the line for Melbourne, and I didn't watch it. I had it on the background as I did the hoovering. So in my notes, this game's got a DNW hoovering. You know how when some players don't play, it's, you know, DNP CD, did not play coach's decision. This is did not watch. I was spring cleaning. Don't know what to tell you. It was a bad game. It was a really bad game. Both teams combined were 33% from the field and 14 of 50 from the outside, 28%. It was terrible. 52 of 157 shots. You know, that's a lot of shots to go up and very few to go in. Low-scoring game. Melbourne came out on top in overtime, 81 to 70, which pushes, I think, the overtime tally in the league to like 15 or 16 games or something, which is good. Melbourne were the favourites, $1.60. Top performers, DJ Kennedy, 21 points, 15 rebounds, 9 of them offensive, 10 of 11 free throws. That, he was the standout in this game. He gave consistent effort, missed a lot of shots under the hoop where he was under pressure, but he was the only guy making things happen for Melbourne. Next best was probably Chris Golding. He had 13 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 of 10 from the outside, but he did hit a lot of big shots to kind of win this game. Mitch McCarron, he played 40 and a half minutes, which is a lot coming into the finals, but he had 15 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals. Look at the best performers for Perth. I've ragged on him before, but Greg Heyer in 25 minutes had 6 points, 10 rebounds, 6 offensive rebounds. I don't think he's a particularly skillful player, but he does have he's got a nose like a beagle for the basketball, especially off the backboard. Nick Kay, 34 minutes, 22 points, 8 rebounds, 4 of them offensive, 3 steals. Jesse Wagstaff had a nice little game. In almost 20 minutes, he had 12 points, shot 50% from the field, 2 rebounds, an assist, a steal, and no turnovers. And that's good. Perth need him big time going into the finals. He's one of the few guys on their bench who's going to see consistent minutes. You would think he and Steindl would really be about it to get time, big minutes, you know, in the sort of 15, 20 minute plus. So they need him big time. Underperformers, Dave Barlow had fouls in this game, finished the game with 4 of them, only played 11 minutes, 0 points. Josh Boone, as I was saying before, like, you know, you always want good form going into the finals, and he just hasn't had it. Again, in this game, 7 points, 7 rebounds, 3 of 8, 3 turnovers, 2 blocks, but just not seeing the minutes, the matchup, it's, people are starting to exploit him, or at least Vickerman feels like they are, and he's gone away from them. Kasper Ware shot really poorly in this game. He had 9 points, 19% from the field, 3 of 16, 4 rebounds and assists, 33 minutes, 4 turnovers. And I think his last couple of games are what cost him MVP. He's a really good player and a great two-way player and everything, but he shot really poorly. And I'll actually talk about that later on, about the awards. Bryce Cotton underperformed, 11 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 of 21, 14% from the field. You know, to hit 3 shots out of 21 attempts, that's terrible. You know, just the game before, I was saying how good he is, and I still believe he had an MVP caliber season, but certainly not in this game. Look at the team stat discrepancies. Free throws again. Melbourne had 10 plus attempts, made 5 extra points from the line because of that. They beat Perth on the offensive rebounds. Not many teams do that. 26 to 19. Turnovers, they had 2 less, 12 to 14. Blocks, they had 5. Perth had none. It's been Achilles' heel for Perth all year. They really don't have any rim protection, even with Jervis out there. He's a big body, but he's not an agile one. And then fast break points. You know, Perth were probably pretty tired from the Adelaide game and the flight, and it was 13 to 5. Key points, really bad quality game. Melbourne looked casual, stroke lazy. When they had second position on the ladder, if they'd missed this one, if they'd lost, Sydney were going to take number 2, and that would have left Melbourne on the road in Sydney in this first round of the playoffs. Now, luckily, it didn't happen for them. But it could have. I mean, and this is a game where Tarico White sat with a bad wrist. But, you know, as much as I say, you know, they were terrible, and they were, they've got to work out 2 things. One, their first quarter woes, their low energy coming into a couple of games. And then 2, what they're going to do with Josh Boone. He's sort of falling out of the rotation. They don't seem to like him. Pledger and he are so very similar. What's good is they're not just dragging him and putting in Pledger. It's not a personal thing. It's an actual strategic option. But I want to see them play Boone. I actually like his game. Biggest deficit of the fourth quarter was 11 points. So, you know, Melbourne, what I do like about them is they go down, but they do have the ability to weather the storm, stay together, and come back later on. They're a hardworking team. They make adjustments on the fly very well. Paul Henare and Dean Vickerman do have this team playing well, especially making change-ups mid-game. Cotton was defended well by Casper Ware all game, obviously. Yeah, that's really all I got. I mean, in the overtime period, Perth got outscored 13-2. The only score was at the 4-minute and 2-second mark, and it was a putback by Greg Hire on an offensive rebound. And then thereafter, Melbourne scored those 13 points. Chris Golding had 3, 5, 8 points in overtime. DJ Kennedy had 3 points in overtime, all from the line, and Casper Ware had a 2. Both teams were scoreless for the last minute and a half of overtime. Really, I've just got minutes watch here. Mitch McCarron played 40.5 minutes, Casper Ware 32.5, Kennedy 36. So, you know, Vickerman was going for it. Cotton, and obviously Gleeson was too. Cotton played 40.5 minutes in a game that meant nothing to Perth when it was obvious they weren't going to lose by more than 33 and thus lose first spot. Nick Kay, 34 minutes. Damian Martin, 36.5. Damian Martin was, yeah, quiet in this one in all those minutes. And that was kind of the season it was. It was a bit of a disappointing end on that game, but the season's been incredible. And as a result of all that, we go into the final round. This is the ladder as it stands, the final ladder for NBL 19. Now, it's the last time to do this in this season. It's
Ladder Watch.
Wildcats, first place, 18 and 10 on 1.06 percentage points. United were number 2, 18 and 10 again on 1.04 percentage points. Kings were number 3, 18 and 10 on 1.02 percentage points. So, I mean, you see 1, 2, and 3 all on the same record, 18 and 10, decided by 0.2 of a percentage point for standings. And then the Bullets obviously controlled their fate. 14 and 14 got in over New Zealand, Adelaide 36ers. I didn't bother working out the percentage there, they just did. The bottom 4. You had the 36ers, Breakers, Hawks, and Taipans. Taipans winning 6 games, losing 22. Tough season for them. Be very interesting to see what they do going forward. I'll be doing a podcast later on, probably after the finals, about, you know, what teams, what they've got, who's coming back, who's not coming back, who's under contract, not under contract, who they're sniffing around about, all that sort of stuff. So the semifinals are decided. They're both going to be played on Thursday, the 28th of February. Times have not been confirmed at the time of recording of this. So you're obviously going to have Perth and Brisbane starting off in Perth at the RAC Arena. And then also Melbourne and Sydney are going to play each other starting off in Melbourne. That's good. Now, one thing to note about the semi-final is that the games are going to be on Thursday, Saturday and Monday for the Perth series. So they're going to play Thursday night, have a break Friday, play again Saturday. And then obviously a break Sunday and play Monday. But you look at the Kings, they're going to get a little bit extra time. They play Thursday. They have Friday and Saturday off. Then they're going to play Sunday. Then they have Monday and then they play Tuesday. So they get that extra 2 days of rest between game one and two. And as you know, with Sydney, that's always a good thing. We won't have any more basketball action until the 28th. As of recording, today's Monday, the 18th of February. We have 10 days of NBL break before anything happens. Guys, looking at the finals going forward. Now, as I said, I'm going to do a more in-depth finals preview, so I will do it lightly. But Perth are going to play Brisbane. That series is 2-2. Now, what's important to know is that the last time they played was round 10, where Brisbane were in Brisbane and beat them 93-86. That's the only game that Lamar Patterson has played against the Wildcats. In the other games, Perth won in Perth in round 5, Brisbane won in round 3 in Brisbane, and then in round 2, Perth won in Perth. So the home team has won every single game between these two. The series is 2-2, and as I said, that one game with Lamar Patterson before they changed imports from Holt and Alonzo G to Patterson and AJ Davis. Next series, number 2, Melbourne. Played number 3 Sydney. This is probably the crown jewel in the NBL final series. Melbourne hold a 3-1 head-to-head record. The home team has won 3 of 4 matchups in this one. Sydney have never beaten Melbourne in Melbourne, only in Sydney. The last time these two teams met was on round 17, where Sydney won 97-85. They also played off in round 10. Where Melbourne came into Sydney and won 70-75. They met in round 7 when Melbourne won 84-82. Very close four games. So, and then round 4 was 77-70 and a Melbourne win. So in Melbourne, so it's all very tight between these two teams. I'm not going to give any picks about who's going to win these final series. I'll do that in the next pod. Let's go back and look at some league news. Obviously, we had the awards. Let's start with the MVP, the biggest one. Andrew Bogut obviously winning this one. 83 votes. He won that with. Casper Ware was second with 77. Cotton 65. That stat line of votes would suggest to me that the votes were done before that last round. Cotton, I think, should have been ahead of Ware. I actually had Cotton kind of as the MVP. I can totally see why it's Bogut. I think those two are nearly inseparable. Cotton did miss those games, so I'm really not. I think the result is great. I think Andrew Bogut is, you could say, with, if you were looking back on this season 20 years from now, when you have no memory of what went on, and if you saw Andrew Bogut there as the best MVP, that would be accurate. Could have been Cotton as well. Coach was Dean Vickerman, which I he was my pick for it until they lost those two games that I feel they lost really because the team wasn't pumped up, wasn't ready, which I really put a lot. I put everything down to the players, but that especially down to the coaching. I do think he was coach of the year. I think, you know, as much as he didn't finish on top, he did win the same amount of games as Trevor Gleeson, and I felt like he was a little bit more of a strategist than Gleeson. I think often they won because of sheer performance from their players, whereas I thought Dean Vickerman and the Melbourne United won a lot more games out of strategy. So I was happy about it. But what I was not pleased about was the fact that Gleeson was not actually a finalist. The three finalists for Coach of the Year were Vickerman, Andrew Gaze, and Rob Beveridge. And I think Rob Beveridge did a pretty good job under the circumstances, but shouldn't have been in there. It should have been Trevor Gleeson as the third finalist. You know, as much as Beveridge, the season kind of came out from under him and his players kind of revolted on him, that's still on the coach. Next was Defensive Player of the Year with Bogut. The only other one I could possibly think of who'd be in contention was Kevin Lish, and obviously Bogut's a better defensive player than he is. Sixth player of the year was Tarangi, or Tarangi. I thought he was deserving. A lot of people said, "Oh, you know, Mika Vekona." It could have been Vekona. I actually had Jordan Jett. I like sixth men who come in and make a real impact. And Jordan Jett had a couple of game winners and always seemed a bit of a difference maker for Illawarra. Not so much late in the season, those last two rounds, but certainly early on, I dug his game. Most improved went to Tarangi. Sure, I would have given it to Dave Barlow. I know there's a lot of conjecture about the rules of this, how this award is given, but my thought is he was nominated, Dave Barlow, and his numbers last year were terrible, and he, in sort of better minutes or very similar, did better. And I just thought it was, I think the NBL is a real chance to do something individual. I think with everything the NBL does, it should do it totally different. Well, not totally different for the sake of being different, but do it in an NBL way. You know, I thought the gala was overwrought. I think just do it a little bit more grassroots and a little bit more, just more NBL, more honest to itself. You know, lose the dancing, lose the drumming, you know, do it almost like a wedding. I wouldn't have all the players from the entire league at the thing. It's just too many. I'd just have the eight tables. Well, next year will be nine. Nine tables, and each team sends three representative players, and, you know, coaches and whoever else wants to come. And that's it. I wouldn't have had every player in the league come out for it. Going on, though, Rookie of the Year was Harry Froehlich. That was obvious. The Ref of the Year was given to Michael Aylin. I'm not a fan of him as a ref. I think he loves making the big home call and causing a big stir and a big round of applause in games. I would have given it to Tony Caldwell, the feminine ref, the lady ref, who does a great job. She's the most consistent, and consistency is really what you're looking for in an NBL ref, or any basketball ref for that matter. All-NBL first team was Andrew Bogut, Nick Kay, Lamar Patterson, Casper Ware, and Cotton. I agree with that. I think I think Sean Long should have been in over Kay, having said that. I don't have their stat comparisons, but Sean Long had a tough start to the year, but his, you know, ever since about round, 10 or something, when him and Wesley had huge games, I just felt like he was the second best big in this league. And Nick Kay was great, and you certainly wouldn't take Kay over Patterson, but I wouldn't take him over Long either. I would have swapped them out. You look at NBL second team, you had DJ, Daniel Johnson, Sean Long, Mello Trimble, Nate Sobey, and Jerome Randall. The other one, I thought there is a case for Trimble or Randall going into that first team over Casper Ware. I know a lot of people are going to think I'm crazy because he's a third MVP candidate. I don't think the case is strong, but of all the people who are next most likely to drop out, it would be him. Not because it's strange. Dropping out of the first team would not necessarily mean he's not a top three MVP candidate. Anyway, there's a case for it. In Casper Ware's last six games, he went 30% in a win, 25% in a win, 36% in a loss, 38% in a win, 26% in a loss, and 18% in a win. You know, those are bad shooting games for six games. Six games is a third of the season, you know, and he started slow at the beginning of the season as well, so there's a case for it, but he was such a good two-way player that I'm only too happy to see him stay in the first team, but I would exchange Nick Kay and Sean Long. In other team news, league news, the Boomers have announced their team for the FIBA Basketball World Cup qualifiers. It's going to consist of Tim Conrad, Mitch Creek, Daniel Greeter, Isaac Humphries, Daniel Johnson of the 36ers, Jack Landale, Mangok Mathlong, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Emmett Nahr, Nathan Sobey, Lucas Walker's pretty lucky to get a call-up, I would say, Jared Weeks, and Tom Wilson of the Sydney Kings. So, eight debutants, you can pluck them out pretty obviously. Good luck to them. They're heading off to Kazakhstan, I believe, in the FIBA qualifier. In other news, Nathan Sobey has signed with French club Strasbourg. No need to worry. This is only through the NBL offseason. He will return for next year, apparently. Which team he will return to is unknown. He is a free agent, And obviously, I believe he is from Victoria. I don't think he's from Melbourne, but he's from Victoria. So, you know, the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, probably are looking to pair him with Mitch Creek. Wouldn't be a bad one, too. As I said, the playoffs start February 28th, and that's a Thursday. Times are to be confirmed. Guys, that is everything for this episode of the podcast. Going into the finals, because there's less games, I'm going to have more time to delve into each game a little bit more honestly and in depth. I will be doing a pod next week on finals previews. I'm also hoping to get something up, NBL Pocket Podcast TV, which is going to be basically this set to vision, showing some actual game footage. Fingers crossed with that. Usual call to actions, guys. I'm heavily on Twitter, at NBL Pocket Pod, P-O-D. Catch me there. You can send me an email, nblpocketpodcast@gmail.com. Send through any questions you have or want answered on there. Facebook, I believe I have a Facebook account as well. Why not? NBL Pocket Podcast. Jump on there. But more importantly, guys, the tickets actually went on sale. Pre-sale of tickets went on today. So it's a good idea to buy, you know, one or two, or, you know, grab a handful just in case, you know, people want to go. Obviously, I bought three, one for myself, and then two for your mother and sister to go with me. But, you know, buy your own tickets and take them instead. I've got lots of people I could go with, you know. I'm trying to free up those tickets. So that would be great. Thanks very much, everyone, and enjoy the semifinals of the NBL. I'll be around. Oh, remember, YouTube, NBL Pocket Podcast. Going to be doing a bunch of stuff on there. All right, everyone. Take it easy.